Okay, we are here for another episode of The Crunch. Very, very exciting. I think we're up to episode number 81 now, which is huge. Mm-hmm. Couple of new, we've got a new co-host on today on the show, David James.
Hi, Jess. How are you going?
I'm very, very well. Thank you so much for your time.
Pleasure.
We've had Shane Beaumont filling your chair for the last couple of episodes, but we like to shake it up. We like to keep it new and
Thank
keep
you.
It fresh. So we're excited to have friend of crib and friend of the crunch from Sales Coach Australia. And our guest today, our very special guest, is Di Addenbrook, director and licensee of Pulse Property Group.
Hello, Jess.
Welcome, Di.
Thank you. Hi, David.
Hi, Di. How are you? Nice to meet you.
You too.
First time.
Yeah.
I love that. So, guys, we're going to kick off with our little bit of market commentary and what's going on in the market at the moment. I did ask DJ for his kind of expertise and his what's going on. You mm-hmm. obviously talk to a lot of agents around. Mm-hmm. That's your
I
job.
Do. Yep.
How many reps are you working with at the moment, just to give people an idea?
If I take teams and the individuals within the team and then individuals, this is the highest I've ever been at. As of a couple of days ago, it was 93 people I deal with in the course of a month.
Wow.
So it's pretty busy.
It's a big job.
So but you're on the route to retirement, DJ.
Yeah, I keep saying that, but I don't want to let go, Jess. This is just too exciting.
Too much fun.
Yeah.
Too much fun. So we pulled some stats. I pulled some stats, which everyone would have seen in the news lately. Currently, there are 60,000 vacant positions, people that are needing to come into the job market. We have a severe skills shortage. We've got undersupply in the market. There's not a lot of new stock coming on the property market, and our affordability index in WA is at 23% as opposed to 6% in Sydney. But we continue to see in the news this, worries about interest rates, worries about the property market bottoming out, all of those things. What are you hearing from your 93 clients, DJ, at the moment in that regard?
Let's start with a comment that you make in regards to what's happening in the rest of Australia and the mm-hmm. rest of the world. We can't control that, Jess and Di. We've got no control over that whatsoever. So those reps that have gathered together and they're suburb or patch specific and doing exceptionally well in there, and they know what their sellers want, they know what their buyers want, et cetera, they're the ones that are doing well. Because, mm-hmm. you know, we just can't control it, Jess. But just control your patch and your neighbourhood and your farm area.
For sure.
And there's plenty to go around. But I think on a positive side, we need to go back to, and Di, you would probably remember this too, you know, 2006 to 2012, where we had similar conditions in Australia where the East Coast market was going nowhere. Take out GFC at this stage. And we were going exceptionally well because we were in a commodity super cycle. We had that mining industry building boom going on.
Mm-hmm.
And even with GFC, we got through that better than lots and lots of other parts of Australia. Sure, after that we had a slowdown, but then we had another kick in 2014. So I think we've got similar economic conditions in Western Australia now. And the other thing that we can go forward with confidence, because we are a resource state, is we've got minerals now that they didn't want in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's all that in regards to low emissions around the world, the lithium, you know, the cobalt, the copper, the nickel. The nickel price would be probably three times as high as what it was back in that period. So the other thing, Jeff, is so as a real estate salesperson, principal, whatever it might be, you need to know that. So when you step out each day, you've got confidence going into your marketplace that at some stage or other, if you're doing what you're supposed to do, there will be a deal there for you.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we can go forward in confidence based on previous years and also based on all those jobs. Only a couple of days ago in the West Australian, they listed all the professional people that were required, and it came to about not quite 10,000. But the other thing they're really lacking that we can't get is the skilled labourer diet.
That's right.
They just seem to have gone.
Mm.
Yeah, so that's where you get to your 60,000. And the only people that can help cure the housing situation is the real estate industry, because we're the ones that will find them a house to buy or a house to rent. Might be a bit tough at times, but that's the role that we play.
Absolutely. Di, when we talk about patch specific, can you tell us about your specific patch?
Of course, yes. We're lucky enough to be working down around south of the river, so Applecross, Argyros, Mount Pleasant and down to Rossmoyne, Shelley and suburbs surrounding. So we've I would agree with everything David's just said.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers are as they are. But in some of the patches, life goes on. I haven't seen a decline yet in values. All sorts of reasons for that, of course. Supply is the biggest issue. But I think the families are still looking for the same sort of product. We have a mixture still. I think first-time buyers and investors are back in the market or trying. You know, it's very hard for them. And then, of course, we've got families wanting to move for all the same reasons.
Yeah, you're very school-driven kind of.
The areas we're in, it's a big bonus, really. We've got, a couple of good universities also in sort of a 10-minute drive. So we really are surrounded by options, and I think also being on the river, there's that lifestyle that goes with it. So it's quite a unique combination in a way. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's your messaging to your sellers at the moment? Because obviously we did see kind of a real peak in sales earlier in the year, late last year, early this year, and now I'm hearing from a couple of different agents around that. Sellers who are going, maybe finally we're getting the confidence to sell, but maybe they've almost missed the boat or will be missing the boat by the time they actually get to market. What are you feeling about that?
I think, yes, that conversation is certainly back in. I think it still comes back to they are hesitant on going to the market because there's just nowhere else
to go
after that. And I think that is holding up, the numbers. Mm-hmm. I think that's what's reflected also is that there's just not the stock that they can go from A to B. Mm-hmm. I think there's people looking still. I think it's people that have been looking for some time. We're seeing people back in the market after a couple of years that think, now's the time to buy and lock that, interest rate in before the next, rise comes. So I think, numbers are going to hold. As they are, I don't think we're going to see much of a change.
There's an opportunity there, Di, because the last interest rate rise regime we had was in 2010. So that's 12 years ago. So everyone that's bought a house from 2010 to now hasn't been through it.
That's right.
So I was onto my clients 6 months ago about this. Go back in. There's heaps of data available to you, and make contact with those people that are in that date range, because. If you're only doing an appraisal at this stage, we don't know what's around the corner for them.
That's right.
So there's that agent, Jess, that's seeking out those opportunities and doing things a little bit differently and thinking outside the square, as we say, they're the ones that are actually creating opportunities rather than wait. Mm-hmm. And also, Di, in addition to that, where over the last 2 years, the general comment's been, DJ, there's no stock because people want to sell but they've got nowhere to go. So they're nervous. But, I work with one specific office that sells either under the auction system or the end date sale system.
Yes.
And with a 60-day settlement, we've yet to have one where we've sold that seller has not found something that they can move into within 60 days.
There's all sorts of options you can give them.
There is.
Which we're seeing.
Yeah. I think Shane said that last week. He said, look, if you're worried about it, I've got a spare room, but I can't imagine that's going to be.
Yeah, no, that's right. And because it is, it is ticking over, isn't it? There's definitely options. And you just give, I think if you're really embedded in your patch and you're looking after the clients, and you know a lot of the clients, there's a lot of families, that I work with, that you give them alternatives. You say, we need to come on now or in 6 months' time, and this is the plan, this is the trajectory we'll work on. Mm-hmm. We give a lot of advice and navigate contracts to get them to perhaps rent back, their property. So there's still all those same options are out there, and it is all moving along.
Ooh. What are your thoughts, Di? Your patch, I would assume, and I could be wrong here, I haven't looked it up, but that a lot of your clients are not sitting within the range that DJ's talking about, where they've just bought in the last 12 years, that they potentially have experienced rate rises before, a little bit more established, maybe on their second or third property. Would that be correct?
I would say definitely we work probably more with second and third tier buyers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But we are dealing with the first home buyers as well to some degree. And yes, they are nervous, but they're jumping in.
Okay. Because I was going to ask, we're looking at, the cash rate. Some people are expecting interest rates to go to 6 or 7% maybe by the middle of next year. And that for someone who has been sitting at zero for such a long time or seen it, it's a big jump for people, you know. So is there some nervousness in those first home buyers?
I think certainly for the first home buyers, investors, I think, you know, trying to lock in the rate. But, yes, as you were asking, the second and third tier, they're not really hesitating. They've got their plan in place. They will continue to, you know, sell and move, you know, whether it be down, you know, right-sizing or, you know, the families that are just finishing, you know, high school, coming out of that zone, now looking for a lifestyle purchase, which might be, you know, closer to the river or whatever that might be. So I think that it's, the whole market is not nervous. I think there's some real health out there still.
Are we anticipating that there may be a little bit of a boom of properties coming on the market mid next year with people who are coming out of fixed term and potentially cannot afford the mortgage that they took out 3 years ago?
I think that's there. I think the people that have built, you know, quite a large loan, have built a new house, will find the hardship in, you know, in 12 months' time. And I think the depositing of some of those properties back onto the sales market, we will absolutely see. I think the second half of next year will make some change. I don't think it's going to be, you know, doom and gloom, but I think the stock levels will change. And it's going to be a slow stock level change until then.
So, Di, that being the case, you start prospecting now.
Absolutely.
For that in anticipation. Be ahead of the market. Rather than keep talking about it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Be ahead of the market. And if you're well embedded in your suburbs, You'll know. You'll know who to talk to. You, as you said, you'll look up that data. You'll go through your software and you'll put that program together. We always find that we're busy, even in a hard market, for all those reasons. Lots of conversations with the people out there in your patch.
Beautiful. DJ, anything to add on any?
Oh, look, I think the prospecting part, you know, when you're short of anything, that commodity becomes valuable, doesn't it? Well, that's the same. We're short of listings, we're short of sellers, and that's been the case now for many months because the rearway numbers, Di, as you would know, aren't changing. So if they're staying around the same numbers, which is around about 800 or 900 sales a week, well, there must be 800 or 900 listings coming to market. So therefore I need to have that prospecting plan and marketing. It needs to be funded by money and funded by time, and there will be stock there for you.
I agree.
There will be stock there for you. But if you're anticipating anything in our real estate market and you're maybe just talking, say, 7 or 8 months away to the middle of next year, you don't wait till then. You start now. You start those relationships that you haven't had before. And the beauty of technology in our industry now, Di and Jess, is the fact that we've got so much data available to us, we've just got to use it.
That's right. And people are always, they're always hungry for information, aren't they?
Oh, yeah,
if you want to talk to someone about are you interested in the value of your home, you know, this, as long as you've got good information to give out, you know, they're usually there for a conversation.
Yeah, they're there for the value you know, education. That's what we talk about rather than sale.
That's right. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. You go to a social function this weekend and you meet people that you don't know and they say, what do you do? I'm in real estate. Oh, how's the market?
Yes.
Yeah, everyone wants to know.
2 years ago that wasn't the case.
No.
That kicked you out. Beautiful. Thank you so much, guys. I want to move on, Di. Obviously, you're our special guest today, so we want to have a little bit of a chat with you about your background in real estate. 25 years, going strong.
Long time.
Still going strong. Tell me, Pulse Property is a very much a family-oriented business. You've got Kiri, who's sitting behind us at the moment. Your daughter Kiri working with you. You've also got Zach, who is moving into more of kind of a leadership, I guess, that's position right. within the business. Tell us about that.
How that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. I grew up in a family that my dad had a real estate business. Yeah, so I can't remember a dinner table conversation that didn't involve some some sort of real estate topic. So, you know, Dad had his own business for about 45 years and he was, you know, very successful and did some developments and whatnot as well. And I think, look, I think Kiri and Zach have had the same sort of education at the dinner table possibly. Zach has then gone on to do, he went and did his master's in business. So, and then he came back to help us transition to have two branches. And I think once he got into it, he could see, you know, how it all worked and managed to help with, you know, the business side of things, but then saw the sales and thought, I really want to do that.
What is it about the sales that he loved? What is it about sales that you guys love?
Nothing's predictable. other than plans that you put into place for prospecting and so on. The results are not always predictable. And I think every day is different.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you really like building up relationships, you know, like, you know, I get to deal with, you know, two generations and so on and so forth, and parents that send their kids to me to, you know, talk to Di about, you know, investing or whatever, which is huge, of course, and can't be taken for granted. And I think Zach can see all that. And I think he gets to apply the business side. But he also gets to go out and talk to our patch, if you like, and just bring his own style to it.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and I'm sure DJ talks with his clients all the time about being authentic and the reaction you get back, you know, from that. So, it's the only thing I really ever wanted to do was get into real estate. The kids got to a certain age that I thought, yep, now's the time.
Yeah. So did that come from you or did that come from them?
But I have to say the family's been very supportive and very patient because working 7 days
there's
a week.
There's your daughter sitting over there.
I know, she's smirking at me. But, you know, whilst it's 7 days a week. You know,
yeah,
people would say, oh, you only work on the weekend. I'll go, no.
I would like to know. Obviously, it's a really hard industry to get into at the moment, and bringing on new reps is a risk for a business. And for someone like you who's been working in your patch for 25 years and you've built up such a level of trust, how did you and Zach approach kind of, not that you're handing your clients over yet, but how does he approach your clients to build up that level of trust and for them to kind of trust him as much as they trust you?
Yeah, that's a really good point. It does take time, doesn't it? I think when you're quite consistent with your personality and the way you deal with people, that's what builds the trust. And I think introducing Zach to my clients as I go out and about was the key.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're lucky enough to go face to face, not everyone can, you know. But of course, with, you know, technology now, we have other options. But I think he has to show himself as having the knowledge. And I think certainly for the younger people that come into the industry, you really have to have perhaps more knowledge than the person next to you.
Yeah.
Because they'll look at the young face and they'll go, well, perhaps I'll talk to someone with, you know, more experience or whatever. But I would just say have lots of information that will put your client at ease. And that it takes time. You build on that. Zach, you know, now will work with multiple members of families because the result is, you know, he listens, the result is what they expect or more than what they might expect. So it is a matter of, I think consistency is the key.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm also excited for you from the point of view that you're talking, that you're now saying you're dealing with the second generation, et cetera, because we used to be very conscious of selling a second and a third and a fourth home. So you sold on the family home, then you sold an investment property, then you sold the family home, another one. And the industry's tended to move away from that. But once again, under your business model, there's a second, and then eventually with Zach there'll be a third generation there. So we're getting more than one deal out of that one person.
Why do you think the industry's moved away from that? Because that seems to me a smart way to do business. You're not prospecting new clients all the time, right? You want...
The key
80%
is to
of your
look
business
after
should come from 20% of your clients.
Absolutely. I think that makes for perhaps the more consistent results, that 80% of looking after the database. That is probably why I haven't really had to worry about too many, you know, dips and or troughs in the sales figures. People will just walk in, you know, for a chat, knowing they'll get that information that they seek. Mm-hmm. I still see it as a bit of a luxury. I don't take that for granted.
Mm.
I think you're right. I think if people could have that in their business, I think they would. But it's just not always the same formula for everyone, is it? Or office and location and so on. So I think, you know, it ticks a lot of boxes for us, where we are and what we do and being the family business.
I think from my perspective of that, Jess, it gets down to relationships and trust, doesn't it?
Mm.
That we just don't speak to people via an email every month.
No, that's right.
And sure, even if you're driving down a street and you sold them a house 5 years ago, get out of your car and knock on the door.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Because it gets down to, Di, that you know, we're not responsible for people's changed circumstances, but we're responsible for being available when their circumstances change.
Yes.
And when that happens, they just think of your office. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think talking about that style, we're one of the best things we get to do is be embedded in sponsorship in all the local clubs.
Mm-hmm.
So we see a lot of people in out of the office, if you like, out of that platform. And I think that, and they see us supporting all these different sporting groups and schools and whatnot. And I think that we love it. Mm. It's just such a wonderful part. Mm. I sort of feel like we're giving back, you know, because my kids grew up in that community. So I feel like we can give back by doing that, by sponsoring it, whether it be the bowling club or, you know, the Netball Association and so on. And I think that just blends those conversations, you know.
Yeah. And Jess, can I just ask one more question of Di? And Di, do you see an advantage to your business in Zach coming from a business background and he brings that business acumen to your business?
I do. I think things, you know, have changed a lot. You know, we're lucky enough to have all this software and technology we get to use now, which I think is, you know, fabulous. But I think the benefit of having Zach's business background is that he will get to take the business perhaps in whatever direction he wants, whether it be more all-encompassing and, you know, more corporate or what. But I don't think we'll ever lose the foundation of the local community. But, yes, I think he has, you know, we sit down, we do our plans. I think that's really important. Mm. He will have something he wants to, you know, project for the business, whether it be 12 months or 5 years. So I think, yes, I've learned a lot. Sometimes you learn on the fly as a small business owner and you don't always have
always
all the
answers. Learn on the fly.
Yeah, and you don't always have all the answers, do you? Let's be honest. So I think, yes, having that knowledge come to, you know, to a small business is quite a luxury. Yeah.
I do. I think it's the future.
Beautiful. I'm going to shift gears a little bit and I'm conscious of time, but I have one final little topic for you, Di. I know you ran for the Rewa board last year and I wanted to get an understanding of your motivation behind that. Why did you want to run and, you know, what, if you want to go into it, the kind of changes you might like to see out of Rewa if that was something that you were looking at?
I just thought I wasn't working quite as the 7 days a week anymore, and I thought, well, like, you know,
I've got to fill your days like DJ.
Yeah, so it's interesting, isn't it? Don't sit back. Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah. So, but yeah, look, I wanted to contribute. I think the good thing about doing it was I got to speak to some more realtors. It was really encouraging to see the quality of candidates for the board.
Mm-hmm.
Very impressed with a real mixture of not only experience but age. Some terrific people on the board. We've had some really strong candidates in the past. You know, Lisa Joyce and Suzanne Brown, who's just been elected as deputy president. So you know, some really wonderfully strong leaders out there. And the board is you know, getting them on board. So which is fabulous. I wanted to just give something back. Perhaps I had people ring me and they said, look, you know, we like that, you know, perhaps we might be able to, you know, ring you and ask for advice or help with something. And really, I think that's what makes the institute so strong.
Mm-hmm.
Rewa is a strong institute in comparison to
other states.
Others. And the more, you know, I'm on the sales committee currently and the conversation's great. You know, whether we're talking about, you know, amendments to forms or what agencies need help in.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's important.
Do you, is there anything you think could be, was there anything you wanted to improve? I guess the reason I ask that is because, you know, we tend to be on the receiving end of people's gripes or when they're underwhelmed with things. And people are always, you know, they always have something that could be improved. So I just wonder, from that point of view, you know, what your opinion was in that regard, if things could be done.
I think one of the things I thought, coming from a small sort of boutique business, I thought that would be a good side of the conversation to add on the board. I also think we're very lucky in as much as, see, I think advocacy is really, really important and we get to talk to that department when we head into REWA for meetings. And I think that learning a little bit more about that, having that conversation sort of firsthand for me was great, because I really feel that they're trying their hardest to, you know, talk to, you know, the state government and push what the public is wanting. And I think that's – I sort of wanted to be able to go in there and have those conversations, see what I could take out and help other agencies with.
I think sometimes agents forget that that is a very large part of what REWA are there to do.
Absolutely.
You know, I think we hear a lot of gripes in regards to the awards and that kind, you know, who's up for what category and those types of things, and they forget that actually, you know, a lot more of what the work that they do is to improve, you know, relations with the state government and legislation and all of those things, and the awards are a small portion.
If you're doing what DJ will be asking his clients to do and prospect and have your plans and look after your clients, those awards
don't matter.
They don't matter, but they end up coming anyway.
Yes.
So, you know, I think you're doing all the right things for the industry and your clients. It's the best thing you can do.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
DJ, do you have any other questions?
No. I think, you know, the only thing I would add with REWA is, you know, of course, lobbying's become very popular these days. And I said for many years when I was a member of REWA and had my own offices, et cetera, was that I could lobby my local member, but you need someone above that. You know, you need a board or you need an institution, don't you?
Absolutely. And there's some very strong members there.
Yes.
With helping.
Yeah. Well, I think through, you know, throughout COVID, I think there was some really strong messaging coming out from REWA about, you know, Damien did a really great job in kind of getting in to the media and having that opinion put out there. So.
And Neville Posse jumped straight into helping the agents.
Yeah.
And make amendments for the harder times ahead. But
because, ladies, you know, sometimes, you know, people say, oh, real estate agents, et cetera, but look at the number of people they employ in Western Australia.
Absolutely.
It'd be a lovely number to know how much is paid out in not only in wages and salary but commissions each year that goes back into the economy.
Right.
But it's a huge industry.
We've spoken about that with Ross, not only the actual agents but all of the other service industries that you create, creatives, right.
Plumbers,
stylists,
tradespeople,
you know, all of those things. That so very important part of the economy, that's for
Indeed.
Sure. All right, guys, that was a pleasure. Thank you so, so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks,
DJ,
thank you.
And we'll have you back, DJ, before long, although it'll be 2023, I'm sure.
That's good.
Can you believe it? thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Jess.
Thank you.
Pleasure.